Hello and welcome to Multiform. Every week we get together to talk about the latest Xbox news and rumors and the games we're playing lately. I don't know why I delivered it like that this week. I'm just trying to mix it up every week. New episodes post every Monday morning. You can email the show, questions@multiformpodcast.com. This is episode 225. I'm Tim Shelton, and I'm joined by Spencer Rain. He just froze. There he goes. And Gus Harden.
Hello.
It's funny. We have different problems with doing this digitally after the pandemic than we did before. We used to have more like technical problems when we were local. Now we have more digital internet problems. Okay. So this week's what we've been playing is going to be interesting because I had a lot of free time and Spencer and Gus did not. So let's go in order. Gus is currently holding up his cat, Bruce Wayne Harden. Let's go in order of activity. Gus, you didn't really play much this week, but you do have one thing of note.
Yes, I am installing Midnight Suns right now. I feel like I heard the Xbox notification alert like 10 minutes ago, so it's possible that it is either finished, which I doubt, or it is
ready to play.
Ready to play, which is like I can open it and look at the menu and do nothing else.
Stare at the menu. That was remember when that was a huge selling point of the PS4 and the Xbox One and just never came to fruition?
Yeah, it's just like, why does it? It's like, doesn't matter.
When they pitched it, it was
so excited for it, but then it was like, it doesn't really do anything for me. I can just
actually, well, it made sense. So there were like two games that I got that made sense for, and they were both sports games. And one of them was NBA 2K, and the other one was a Madden game, because what you could do is you could play like the demo while it finished installing, and so you could like kind of like get a feel for the game.
Yeah, I feel like the promise of it when they pitched it was that like developers could make it to where you downloaded the bits for like the first level or the first world ahead of everything else, and then you could play that. But it sounds like extra work, and I'm sure it was for the developers, and when they're in crunch trying to ship a game, I'm sure that was the least of their worries, so it never ended up being a thing, which makes sense. So I'm interested in what you're going to think of Midnight Suns, because I made the joke that it's kind of like XCOM meets Marvel Snap, because it's, you know, a card-based game for battling, but it's also turn-based and tactical, like XCOM. Also, the Metacritic is pretty good on that game. It's getting mid-80s, which is at least a solid 10 points higher than Gotham Knights was getting, which I think Gotham Knights reviews were actually generous. So I can't wait to hear what you think next week. I plan on playing it at some point, but we'll get to this in a minute. But I've got a lot of games I'm already playing, so I don't want to buy it, install it. My hard drive's pretty full at this point and not have time to play it. Spencer, what about you? I know you also didn't get up to it too much this week, but more of the same, it seems.
Nothing exciting. Yeah, like I said last week, I had started Act 3 of Pentiment. And I played it a couple times this week, so I've got to be pretty close to the end, maybe. I know I'm at least a third of the way, possibly a little bit more, maybe halfway, I don't know. Mostly that. I mean, I did play some more Crusader Kings on Xbox. So nothing too exciting. I don't really have an update on the Pentiment stuff, just because I haven't really figured out. I mean, there's definitely been some, like, we'll call it the Act 3's version of kind of the twist that's happened to me. But I haven't figured out. I haven't gotten to the resolution yet, nor have I gotten to the resolution of like the whole game. So next week, hopefully I'll have beaten it, and I can kind of give a non-spoiler kind of overview of the ending and how it goes.
Okay, look, I'm going to tell what I'm about to say. I'm making up. It's not the actual twist ending, but you could see a world when that whole dream sequence at the beginning, what if that wasn't the dream and the entire game was actually the dream, and then you were the killer all along? That would be a twist. That's not the twist. I just made that up, but that would be a twist.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I was going to say that couldn't happen based off of things that later happen in the game. But I guess by definition, if the entire thing's a dream, then who knows? But
or like a, I don't, you know, something you made up in your head to cope with the being a killer.
Yeah, I don't think that's what happened, though. I'll just say that.
It doesn't, because I've Googled it. But yeah,
you know what happens.
I did see some reviews on social media that the game gets way better in the second and third act, whereas the first act, I was not totally involved. But that's because it wasn't my genre. But
I don't know if I would agree with that so far. I mean, they've all, like, I don't think any one of the acts is better than anyone that precedes it. I would say so far the third act has been the weakest of the three, but I haven't beaten it yet, so I can't quite say that definitively. But yeah. So next week, like I said, I should hopefully have more of a big picture overview to talk about. And I really want to beat it this week, and because I want to, obviously, with The Witcher 3 enhancement coming out in 10 days from when we're recording this, and theoretically maybe Saints Row going on a decent sale here at the end of the year. And I feel like there was something else, but I don't remember what it was. But all that to say, I want to beat it so I can get it kind of out of the way and can get to other stuff. So
are you you weren't at all tempted by the Callisto protocol, were you? I'm not sure if you saw the reviews on that. Super strong.
Yeah, I did see that. I did see that the reviews weren't that great, just kind of in passing, but I wasn't really interested in it, because remember we kind of talked about this a couple months ago. It was like there was like this kind of collection of games that were like semi-horror all the way up to horror that were going to be kind of coming out this fall and in the spring, because you had Callisto Protocol, you'd Scorn. Resident Evil remake, Dead Space remake, all within kind of like a 6-month window of each other. And I feel like so far people have been pretty disappointed, at least with Scorn and the Callisto Protocol.
Yeah, I think Dead Space has probably the highest that and Resident Evil probably have the highest chance of success, since they're based on existing successful games.
Yeah,
but they can still screw it up.
Especially Resident Evil, because you can literally, they've done it twice now, so you just need to do it again using the same engine and everything, and I think people will be like, okay, this works. I don't think people are going to be as picky on that.
I guess that's true, because I was going to say the tank controls change is going to be a big thing, but actually they had to change the tank controls for Resident Evil 2. So it had the tank controls, right? I didn't play the original Far Cry. The original Resident Evil 2, so I don't know.
I don't remember, because I don't think that was before my time playing Resident Evil games, so I do not know. I probably did, though, if I had to guess.
Well, I made up for the both of you in how much I played this week, which is highly unusual for me, but I don't even remember, honestly, because I actually had, it seems like I had less free time this week, but somehow I played more games. So I think it's just that a couple of my shows have already like fallen off for the year or ended their run. And so that's freed up what I would, you know, watch a couple episodes of a show. Now I have more game time. So I'm going to speed run some of these. So my kids, I woke up the other day and my kids were like, Dad, play Lego Star Wars. And I was like, well, I'm not going to say no. So I finished episode 5 of Lego Star Wars with my kids watching me. It's funny. We also watched the Lego Star Wars holiday special, which is really funny, actually. I highly recommend it. It kind of like Rey goes through a warp time warp and goes and visits all the different movies. So she goes and like takes part in all of the like key scenes from the movies in like a comedic way. So like she meets Luke Skywalker as a kid, and she meets Darth Vader fighting Luke at the end of episode 5. And it's all just really funny. But the funny thing, the reason I say that is my kids can't tell the difference, they're so young, between a TV show, movie, and a video game. So when we had the show on, they're like, Daddy, get your controller. Daddy, get your controller. And I'm like, no, Dad, I'm not playing this one. We just played episode 5. Now we're watching. They didn't understand. Anyway, Need for Speed Unbound has a 10-hour trial on EA Play / Game Pass Ultimate. So I downloaded that. I played about an hour, and I was like, I used to be a Need for Speed addict, but I can't do it anymore. It just, the way it plays compared to Forza Horizon just doesn't work with my brain. And the biggest part is the turning mechanics. So in Horizon, it's more realistic. You can either drift through over torquing the rear wheels when you turn, or through braking and turning and letting the back end get out. In this game, it's that artificial arcadey drift where it's like Mario Kart, where you hit left bumper, or in this case, left trigger, while turning, and it initiates a power slide, and then it like artificially like forces you into a power slide. But then it's hard to like counter it well. It just, my brain can't sync it up with the way the Forza drifting works, and I end up either oversteering or understeering and just not being able to do a clean drift. And it just feels so on rails and arcadey compared to, it doesn't feel grounded in reality at all, which, it's a stylized racing game, it's an arcadey game. I mean, there's like anime comic book animations coming out of the car, so it obviously, it's not realism. But I don't like that anymore after I played hours, hundreds of hours of the Forza Horizon games. But I do want to give credit where credit is due in one regard. When I heard Need for Speed was going to have like an anime aesthetic to the next game, I thought it was going to be stupid. I think it's the strongest selling point of this game. The art style is really cool, how it's like a mixture of almost like anime, comic book, and realistic graphics all kind of meshed together. I think this is the most successful Need for Speed has been in changing their artistic direction in the last 10 years. So that's the only thing I have to say about Need for Speed Unbound. It's not for me, but I think if you want an arcade racer, it's probably plenty capable, but I only played an hour of it, so that's just my initial impression. Next up, Battlefield 2042. I did download this because it's on Game Pass. I only played a match or two, and so I don't really have anything else. I guess wanted to throw that out there. And then the two things I spent the most time on this week are Deathloop. I'm trying to finish the game, so I've just been playing the main campaign again and just getting back into it. I'm just reminded how good Deathloop is, especially after playing Gotham Knights and some other games that were not exactly great games recently. Deathloop is just so good, and it's so fun and satisfying when you can accomplish things in so many different ways. It's also frustrating when you try and do something and you fail and you use all your lives and you have to start the level over, but so, so good. And then finally, Gotham Knights. I beat the game, 23 hours played. I did basically everything on the map except for the crime missions that just keep recurring. And here's what's dissatisfying. They added this new showdown mode where you can replay the bosses on harder difficulties, and they added a 4-player heroic assault mode where you fight Starro controlling Man-Bat and some other characters. So Starro's the villain of that one. All of those require a certain power level that I'm nowhere near, and I've beaten the game and done every activity in the game except for grinding crimes, like just random crimes on the street, or premeditated crimes, which are just slightly bigger versions of the regular crimes. So I don't understand. Am I supposed to, I mean, I could do New Game Plus and replay the whole game to get my power level up higher, but like, is the expectation, there's two options. Either I'm supposed to play the whole game again to get my power level up high enough, or I'm supposed to grind out those crimes until I get my power level higher enough. But it seems like after 23 hours and beating everything in the game, it still wants me to put another like 10 hours into it to get like quote unquote in game ready to where I can do some of these other activities. And some of them, I want to see this stuff. Like I want to see Starro, like, and I just can't experience that because I would have to grind out all these ridiculous amounts of stuff. And to further complain about that, so the cap on the level is 30. But the actual cap is 40, but you can only get to 40 by doing New Game Plus. So if you flip to New Game Plus to get to the max level of 40, which unlocks the max gear level of 45, then you can't play any of those bosses that I mentioned in the showdown mode until you beat them again in New Game Plus. So right now I have everything unlocked. I would have to start New Game Plus, beat the game again, and get my power level up high enough for me to engage in any of these side activities. So my frustration just continues with Gotham Knights. That my final score, if I would give this a 10-point scale score, would be 4 out of 10. I dropped it from 5 out of 10 to 4 out of 10 because even with the updates they've done to the game, it only got worse. And it just makes me want to hate it at every turn. The story was fine. I enjoyed the story. That's why I played the game. The costumes are awesome too, like being able to make your own your knight. But every other aspect, traversal, combat... All that bad.
I just hate that it's one of those games, which I thought people had kind of learned to go away from this, but it's one of those games where they kind of force you to grind to get to everything. Like, they force you to basically, it's like, we made this bad game mechanic, and we want you to have to experience it because we made it and we don't want it to be a waste of our time. So we're going to make you do this and lock the cool stuff behind this trash mechanic.
Facts.
I thought we'd kind of gotten away from that, but apparently not.
Yeah. And there's a good variety of types of like random crimes that happen, but they're all really the same. It's like a handful of bad guys, and they're either robbing a car, they're robbing a bank, they're holding up a guy, they're breaking up prison transport. Like, in the end, you just land on a group of guys and pummel them until they stop breathing. Or, I guess, not breathing, since everybody... Oh, by the way, remember before the game coming out when we complained about Red Hood not using real bullets and using rubber bullets? So each character has, like, a four or five little, like, cutscene mini quest side mission where you can kind of just, like, get a little more on their backstory and, like, how they got to be the way they are. Red Hood does have, like, a side story. Minor spoilers. Very minor. Just explaining why he doesn't want to kill anymore, why the Red Hood he was before and before he died and Batman saved his life and all this stuff, and why he's atoning for that and he doesn't want to be a killer anymore. So I will say they at least, to give them credit, they did explain that in a way, and it was a bunch of nothing before release that was a thing. I still think it's stupid that he jumps on the energy souls of the dead through the air, though. That is dumb. Almost as dumb as Robin's teleportation, which sounds cool, but it's so poorly implemented and UI designed that it's basically worthless. It made Robin my least favorite to play. Anyway, enough on me bashing on Gotham Knights. This is a good game to play the story on very easy when you get it for $10 if you're a massive DC fan. If you're not a super DC fan and willing to play a terrible game just for the story, then this is a pass.
This is a game that I want to be in those giant bins at like Best Buy or Meijer where it's like $10 games, you know,
one's buying it. And
it's like a 4 foot deep, like drum full of games. And it's just like the most random games you can think of. And they're like $10 or less or $5 or less. That's what I need to get this for, $10. Cause I'm not opposed to if you like playing a DC comic storyline on easy or very easy so that I don't have to like waste my time so I don't have to waste more of my time and I can theoretically kind of enjoy it a little bit more because I'm not like just hitting the same guy for 45 seconds or a minute. So I will be looking out for this game to get to that $10, $15 range, and I might consider it. Cause I do like,
I wonder,
I but the Bat Family, like I think all of us, the Bat Family is like one of our favorite like kind of subsets of comic book characters, so that's why I think we were all kind of interested in this game, but obviously only you got it so far, Tim.
Yeah, and I said before release I would get it even if it was bad because I'm a DC Comics fan. I didn't think it would be this bad. Like I was expecting Avengers level bad. This is much worse than Avengers. Avengers is like a 7. This is like a 4 or a 5. And I think a bunch of the reviews were kind of generous because if you compare this to the written reviews of like Callisto Protocol, where they're like, okay, the game's awesome, the graphics look awesome, story's decent, the only real complaint they had is combat. I have the opposite with Gotham Knights. The only thing I can say anything nice about is the story and the costumes, but the traversal, the combat, the mechanics, the UI design, like everything else is bad. So when that much is bad, as Gus pointed out to me when I said it was a 5 out of 10 on a previous episode, is a game really a 5 out of 10 if you can't say anything nice about it? Like, and I mean, it continued to annoy me, and I came down to a 4 out of 10, and I think that is fair because I've played much worse, but it's still bad. It's still bad. Anyway.
The whole ranking system is there for a reason, Tim. You can go lower than a 4.
I know. Well, and so I have me and some coworkers have a spreadsheet where we like just like to compare notes on like movies when they come out or TV shows. So we all like give them ratings just kind of as like a ongoing joke kind of thing. Not a joke, but like just a comparison point. And I gave Morbius a 1. Like that's a terrible movie. Like I love Marvel movies, right? So that's an equivalent, right? And it's bad. Like I didn't enjoy when I left the theater. I was like, I think I told you guys, do not see this movie.
Morbius is a true masterpiece, Tim. You're simply too inartistic in your thinking to be able to understand its magnificence.
Yeah, I guess. The only highlight is that the girl that Morbius's doctor girlfriend, she is in Andor and she's a decent actress, but like, it's not Morbin time. Stop saying that in chat. Okay. Moving on to the news. First item of the week, The Witcher 1 remake. So we got confirmation, CD Projekt Red in their latest quarterly update, as well as I think an interview following it. They confirmed that the remake is going to be open world and it's going to be a reimagining of Witcher 1. So I don't know if we talked about this when it was announced, but it's not just going to be a straight up like up-res, new graphics. How do I put this? It's going to be closer to Final Fantasy VII Remake and less like
Kingdoms of Amalur Re-Reckoning.
Or Mass Effect 1, where they like made light improvements. But yeah.
I mean, Mass Effect 1, I would say is even higher than Kingdom of Amalur. That's like the poster child of just cash grab, not really done much work to.
Well, and that's what they did on Gotham, Arkham Asylum and Arkham City when they put those on Xbox One. They just up-resed them and plopped them on there. But yeah, so it's going to be a total reimagining, making it a new open world. The second piece of news that goes with that is that it's not coming until after The Witcher 4 and will use the same technology as Witcher 4. So that means if Witcher 4 is like, I don't know, 4 years away and that game is another 2 to 3 years away, we're probably not going to get Witcher 1 remake for like 7, 8, 9 years.
Why even mention it then?
Investors. I mean, that's why.
I mean, I guess, but I'm just like, well, also that, I was thinking, man, why are they remaking a game that's not even that old? And then I remembered that
their first game. So
they Combat Evolved Anniversary was not like a remake, was it? Just like an up-res, basically.
Well, they did a total graphic skin. This gameplay was exactly the same, but they totally reskinned it in new graphics.
Okay, so it's just like a, okay, so that was only 10 years after. So, and I guess The Witcher is 15 years old now because I was looking at it and I was just
kind of. And like, it was PC only, so this will be the first appearance on console.
I was just kind of like, man, like technology is just evolving so fast that we're remaking stuff that is not even 20 years old yet.
Well, here's the thing. I actually think this is going to be maybe controversial. I think anything pre 2013. Is eligible to be remade or up-resed in some way to get it to the current generation. And then I think from there forward, they should be supported and carried into whatever platform for backwards compatibility. Because anything pre-Xbox One, PS4 was not capable of 1080p, 60fps. But beyond that, everything should be. So if you're like a 360 game that's 720p, 30fps, I think we can do a lot to bring that to the modern era and maybe not ever touch it again.
I feel like we're on the tail end of like the remake era. Cause I remember for like the last decade has just been like remakes or like reboots of a lot of like old stuff from like the '80s, like '70s, '80s, '90s.
Still coming though. We got Fable and Perfect Dark coming back alive with Xbox.
Well, right. Yeah. I guess almost like with Fable, that's more like a revisiting. It's like bringing it back. It's like, I don't think it's going to be like a sequel, or a remake. Yeah. So they're just like continuing on.
Okay. Here's one. Splinter Cell. Splinter Cell's coming back and it's a remake.
Which is fine. Cause it's old and they haven't made a new one for like 10 years.
That's true. Just going to say like, I don't know. I think 8 years is 7 or 8 years is pretty aggressive because if they're making this, if they're developing this in tandem with The Witcher 4, which theoretically is their primary focus right now, because I'm sure some of their team are working on Cyberpunk. Like we've got the big expansion for that next year.
They actually gave us a breakdown of who's working on what. I'll pull it up while you're talking.
But I was just going to say, I mean, if the bulk of their team, you have to think, is probably working on The Witcher 4, and then you've got other people working on the Cyberpunk DLC or just, you know, continued support for Cyberpunk, that either this is getting developed kind of alongside that, if they're using the Unreal Engine, which is what they're going to do for The Witcher 4, then, theoretically you could kind of just... To me, it seems like it's easy to shift from working on The Witcher 4 to working on The Witcher 1 remake. And that maybe they maybe, yes, it's coming out after the four, Witcher 4, but we don't even know when that's coming out. But that could be coming out sooner than we think. Like, that could be something that comes out, you know, in like 2 years, like 2 years from now. I mean, I doubt it, but you never know.
So currently the new Witcher game on this spreadsheet from their last, their fiscal call this last week, looks like about 25%. No, 20% of their staff is working on The Witcher 4 right now.
Okay.
Now, Cyberpunk 2077, current gen support, like support for the existing game, is like less than 10%. Phantom Liberty, the expansion, is over 50% of the studio. So the two biggest are 50% of the studio on Phantom Liberty. Witcher 4 is another 20-25%. The next biggest chunk besides that is the Molasses Flood project. Remember, they acquired the Molasses Flood and they're working on something within the Witcher universe. And then the next one down from that is Gwent related projects, which is, you know, Rogue Mage, Gwent, the mobile Gwent game.
Wait,
and
so
stuff like
hang
that.
On. So they're saying the Molasses Flood project is different from The Witcher 4?
Yes, which I assume it's not going to be like an open world third person. It's going to be like some sort of like narrative story game that isn't like combat focused.
On Wikipedia, they have it listed. So they have The Witcher Remake, then they have Project Sirius, which is, it's said is The Witcher game co-developed with The Molasses Flood. Then they have Project Polaris, which is the other Witcher game, which is the trilogy.
Witcher 4. It's in
the, well, that's the one that says, so is it going to be a trilogy? Is The Witcher 4?
Yeah, it's going to be a trilogy. Witcher 4 is a trilogy.
I guess I forgot that. Okay, so they're working on, so they're working on two Witcher games in tandem.
Yeah, except for one is the Molasses Flood, which is a, you know, a sub studio.
So and it'll probably be a smaller scale project.
Yeah, and then so on top of this, they have The Witcher 1 remake, but that isn't going to really go into full production until after The Witcher 4.
How many people then, did it say? Like what percent?
Which one? Witcher
the
4?
The remake for The Witcher remake.
It doesn't even show on the graph.
Okay, so
it's
they're not
even
working on that yet.
I mean, really. They do have other
projects.
I
mean, they probably have some people working on it, but not like in any sort of significant amount. Like they're maybe doing storyboarding or whatever.
Yeah.
Early
they have an
stuff.
Other category that's less than 5%. It's probably in there.
Okay. So maybe
what's
you're right.
Interesting, though, is they have a note at the bottom that says the other projects category reported at the end of December 2021 and April 2022 includes research phase of Polaris. So that was Witcher 4. So you have to imagine that that other category is research for other upcoming projects and other just like miscellaneous stuff. But
well,
I mean,
who knows, man? I don't know.
There is a steady flow of content from them, though, because we're about to have Witcher 3 next gen. Then we have the Phantom Liberty expansion next year, and we'll probably be done with DLC at that point. They did kind of subtly also mention that there's going to be a Game of the Year edition of Witcher. Cyberpunk next year that'll include all the DLC, and it'll just replace the base game. So instead of $60 for Cyberpunk, it'll be $60 for the Game of the Year edition. And it'll include Phantom Liberty as well as all the other updates over time. I don't know. I'm not going to play The Witcher 1, even though I own it on PC. I definitely, it seems old and not playable in a modern context. I bet it wouldn't play well today.
It's pretty rough. It's pretty rough. I've watched gameplay on YouTube and it's bad. It's like, it's probably as bad as Morrowind, but different because it's just different. I think part of it is because it was made obviously by a Polish team, so there's a little bit of a lack of familiarity, I think. But think of Morrowind and how it looks and plays, and it's not too far from that.
It was also a first game from a new developer at the time, so it's like, you know, a lot of first games, especially if you go back to people that are like world famous now and go back to their first game, it's not usually something super like well-known or successful. Okay, and let me get back to my notes here. Moving on, number two, Far Cry 6. We finally got the stream we talked about was announced last week for the new DLC. It's called Lost Between Worlds. So here's the bullet points of what's happening, and then we'll talk about it. First, there was a new update the day of the stream for Far Cry 6, and that update gave New Game Plus was added, and then a new completionist aid was added to the map to help you find like collectibles and stuff. If you're a completionist still struggling to find the last collectible you're missing, or if you just haven't started, then now it'll be easier. Now on December 6th, this DLC was announced and it's coming December 6th. So we're getting like basically a week from announcement to release, which is kind of nice. It's $19.99, so it's only $20. I guess that price seems okay. Maybe 15 or 10 would have been nicer based on the past expansions of Far Cry 6. But the description reads, following their exploration of a mysterious meteorite impact site, Danny will discover themselves in a twisted space between worlds, accompanied by an incorporeal life form named Faye. Players will need to repair Faye's broken spacecraft by collecting 5 lost shards, each increasing Danny's overall stats and survivability, bringing them one step closer to escape. So basically, it's like you're going to be doing these like interdimensional rifts. There's like 15 of them. They're called rifts, and you fight these like aliens that look like they're made out of like glass shards. And yeah, so the DLC for a very grounded Far Cry game is interdimensional travel and aliens. Man, they really reach for the stars in this franchise, don't they? All the DLCs are always ridiculous. Remember the aliens for Far Cry 5?
When you're reading this, it's just like I'm like shaking my head. Like this sounds like the most incredibly ridiculous. Like I don't even know. Like this isn't even Far Cry anymore. Like this is just like Ubisoft telling the Far Cry developers, like, what do you guys want to do? Alien, interdimensional? Okay, sure. Why not? We'll see if it sells, and it probably will because it's got the Far Cry name stamped on it. But yeah, I can't say I'm interested in this at all based off of that description. And well, I mean, $20 isn't bad, I guess, but like, yeah, man, I don't.
Yeah, it's I'm glad I didn't play the other DLCs that were based on the villains. And I've said this many times on the show. If you listen to the show frequently, you've heard me say this, but I bought the season pass for Far Cry 5. I regretted it 5,000% because the DLC was all just copy paste of the main game, didn't add any new story. It was just very hollow. I beat the first one and I started most of this. I think I beat most of the second one. And by the third one, I was just so burnt out. It's like, why am I doing this? It's exactly the same. Now, for some reason, you could say the same thing about Assassin's Creed and some of the other Ubisoft franchises. In general, I think Ubisoft is just not great at their DLC. Although in the last few years, ever since Assassin's Creed Origins, they seem to be doing this across their franchises where the DLC is always some crazy off the world thing, right? Like Assassin's Creed is always doing the like Isu mythology stuff with their DLC. And now we've got Far Cry doing Stranger Things and interdimensional rifts. I don't think I have time for this. This is something I might pick up way down the line if it's like $5 and I'm bored, but I'm definitely curious of like what this is going to be like in execution. But I have a feeling it sounds better on paper than it will be in execution. So if it sounds good to you, $20, I mean, it's not a huge cost. I'm sure there's going to be at least, you know, 5 to 10 hours of gameplay for $20. So I'm more actually interested in the fact that they added a completionist guide on the map in the game, because I was having trouble hunting down a few collectibles, I believe. And it makes me want to boot it up just to like complete it just in my head as a completionist for most of my games. But we'll see if I actually re-download it. So staying on the Ubisoft tangent, we have a ton of Assassin's Creed news this week. I've broken it down into 3 stories. And I guess, well, I'll just dive right in. First is the new update. The final update for Assassin's Creed Valhalla launched a week early last week. And it added the feature you can now keep your hood on in combat, not just in stealth. It added the final chapter of Ivor's story called The Last Chapter. So it's the last quest line that will exist for Assassin's Creed Valhalla. And then it added a new quest that teases and ties into Mirage called Shared History. And this is one of the cooler things they're adding in addition to the hood thing. They're adding the feature of a weekly free cosmetic item from the store. So now the premium cosmetics that have always been locked behind a real world purchase with real money, you now get one free per week and it resets on Tuesday. I thought that was pretty cool because the game's 2 years old at this point. They've probably gotten a ton of money out of selling cosmetics. And so now they're using it as an incentive to get people to revisit the game once a week and it'll probably work on me because I still have some quests to do in Assassin's Creed Valhalla, and I want to get some free stuff to use in my rest of my journey. So I liked that. And then all this is free, by the way. None of this, all the stuff I just mentioned, the new update is free. You guys have any thoughts on this before I move on to the next item?
It's crazy how much they're supporting this game because it sounded like
2 years.
Well, like a year ago when they were announcing that, what was it? Was it called Dawn of Ragnarok? Was that what it was called? Or was it
Dawn of Ragnarok?
I don't remember. Yeah, so it's when they announced that, they kind of made it seem like we're going to do this and then that's going to be it, which was about a year ago because I think it came out this past spring. But they've continued to kind of churn little things out here and there. Another chapter here to actually wrap it up for free, and the tie into Mirage. I mean, that's all pretty cool. They definitely, I feel like more than any other Assassin's Creed game before it, they're continuing to support this thing for better or for worse. I mean, I haven't touched it in over a year just because I kind of got burned out on it and then lost some save progress, which made the burnout feel even worse because it was like I burned myself out for literally no reason since I lost, you know, like 10 hours of progress there at the end. But yeah, I mean, it's cool for the fans.
Yeah, 10 hours is a lot
that are still playing it, that they're, you know, churning stuff out.
So the next item is they, in the same update, the patch notes for this update, they said, actually, I think this was in the tweet announcing the update. They said additional surprises we have before 2022 comes to an end. So even though this is the last update for the game, they have some more surprises coming. Now, I wonder if we already know what one of those is, because a few days after that, they announced a crossover with Destiny. So on December 6th, Destiny and Assassin's Creed Valhalla, specifically Destiny 2, are crossing over, and there will be cosmetics for both games from the other games. So you'll be able to dress up as specific Destiny characters with themed cosmetics in Valhalla, and you'll be able to get Assassin's Creed robes in Destiny 2, which I gotta say, I'm kind of a sucker for buying the Assassin's Creed robes in almost any game they appear in, as long as it's a game I already play. Like, I'm not going to go play Monster Hunter World because they do an Assassin's Creed crossover, but if they do it to a game I already play, like Destiny 2, there's a chance I might be interested. It depends, though, because I don't like microtransactions generally. But the reason I say that that one was announced shortly after this additional surprises we have before the 2022 comes to an end is because data miners also mined from the game that there are Monster Hunter cosmetics in the game. So it seems like we're also going to get a Monster Hunter cosmetics crossover for Assassin's Creed Valhalla. And I'm sure you guys aren't interested in these cosmetics, but I am more curious. Have you guys noticed the trend for games to cross over with each other lately? Like, The Witcher was just announced to be in the next season of Fortnite, which Fortnite obviously crosses over with everything. Doom is also crossing over with the next season of Fortnite. But I also saw announcements for at least two other games having crossovers of either Assassin's Creed or The Witcher or God of War Ragnarok. And it just seems like more than ever, we're getting cosmetics across brands that don't have any reason to collide. Like this one, for example, Bungie and Ubisoft,
yeah,
doing,
well,
this. Like,
even still, like, it makes no sense. Like, Destiny, and I mean, I guess you could have like an Isu type of tie-in, maybe. Like,
the stuff looks really cool. I will say that. I think I have a link in our show notes if you guys want to click on it and look at the cosmetics.
Yeah, but they do. I agree. It's just super weird. Like, a really, really strange type of crossover. I mean, like I said, the Isu tie-in, like, that's what that's all I can think of as far as like what would possibly make sense. Like, it makes more sense than like crossing over with like Call of Duty, even if they are like the same world technically, you know, just like 1,000 years apart. But they don't look bad. Looks kind of cool.
I'm trying to remember. They just announced the Witcher is crossing over with two other games, Fortnite and one other one, and I can't remember what the other one was. It wasn't, that's it. Lost Ark is getting Witcher 3 stuff. But I think it's only in Korea is what this article on GameSpot that I'm reading says. But I thought I saw it was going to be everywhere. In any case, like, it just seems like more than ever, like, we're getting these weird crossovers. And I bet they have data that says, Like, people just buy more microtransactions when it's cool stuff, and like, it benefits everybody, right? Like, Assassin's Creed fans are going to go play Destiny, and Destiny fans are going to go play Assassin's Creed. And if they get any amount of people to cross over that didn't already own the game of the opposite game, then it paid for itself, the work that they did to make that content. So I'm sure that cross-selling like that is highly beneficial. Okay, yeah. So the final... Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just agreeing. I mean, there's got to be some sort of market research that you know, shows that it's been very beneficial for them to do that. Just still doesn't make sense, though.
I also saw they announced in the update that in a few weeks, they're adding Ezio's robes to Valhalla. So obviously Ezio's robes have been in almost every Assassin's Creed game for a pretty long time. I'm surprised it took 2 years for them to come to Valhalla, but it seems very out of place to be wearing those white robes with the Italian Renaissance style running around. I don't know what you want to call it. Medieval. It's not medieval. What do you call the time of Vikings? Spencer, I'm looking at
the Middle Ages. Yeah. I mean, it's still the Middle Ages. It's the early Middle Ages. Yeah.
Sure. Okay. So I wasn't wrong. That makes me feel better. The final piece of Assassin's Creed news is the latest rumor, this one from Inside Gaming, Tom Henderson's site, is that Assassin's Creed Mirage is no longer going to be coming in the first half of the year and is now rumored for August 2023. Which kind of doesn't surprise me, since every Assassin's Creed game almost ever has always come out in the fall, or at least close to it. So something tells me that even though this is targeting maybe now, according to rumor, August 2023, that it ends up being September, October, November, like all Assassin's Creed games before it. Thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, yet another game delay.
Well,
my first thought, even if it's,
yeah,
even rumored. If we never had an official release date, I mean, it still always was, it originally wasn't going to be next fall. Or late summer next year. So I don't know. I mean, it's better than the fall, I guess. Like, you have more, what's the word in August? You're releasing a game in August, you have a lot more of the market share. That's not what I'm looking for, but that's my idea
share.
I'm trying to convey, because there's not as much competition. You know, there's not usually a ton of games coming out in August. It's one of the months of the year that's pretty dead. Other than like sports games, I think sports games historically, like Madden and then back in the day, NCAA football kind of came out around that time. But so from that perspective, I mean, yeah, they'll have less competition, probably make a few more sales. But isn't this one also not full, like not $60? Didn't they say that? Wasn't this?
I don't know if we got
like
confirmation on the price. We know it's more of a streamlined, smaller game.
I thought one of those rumors or things that we had got
right.
In the last like quarter, you know, 3 or 4 months, they were saying it was going to be $40 or $50 or something like that, maybe even 30, but that seems pretty low this day and age.
Well, yeah, you're right. Okay, so the deluxe edition is $59.99, so I think the regular edition is 50. Yep, $50. You're right. I didn't remember that they had priced it $59 for the deluxe edition or $150 for the collector's edition.
That's
yeah,
so interesting.
And according to this, the original release date was just 2023, but I think that their financial update, this is an old article, said it was more like expected in the first half because they said something about their fiscal year.
Yeah, but no, it definitely was supposed to be in the spring, because I remember talking about like what we thought that meant. Maybe yeah. there was never an official release date, but they were always there for the longest time. They're like, oh, spring 2023. I almost feel like too originally they said fall 2022, like a long, like when the game first was announced.
No, because it was announced in September, and so that was already basically pre-fall.
For some reason I thought originally they said that, but maybe I'm crazy.
I will also say Assassin's Creed is notoriously one of the leakiest franchises, so I'm more inclined to believe this leak than others, because it just seems like everything Assassin's Creed leaks.
Yeah.
Okay, number four. Game Pass has been announced for the first half of December, and man, is this a list. So let me run down this, and we'll talk about the highlights. So three games are out already: Eastward, The Walking Dead, The Final Season, and Totally Reliable Delivery Service, although that one is PC only. The rest of the month is as follows. Lego Star Wars The Skywalker Saga, sorry, the first half of the month, is coming. Lego Star Wars is coming December 6th. Hello Neighbor 2, December 6th. Chained Echoes, December 8th. Metal Hellsinger, December 8th. High on Life, December 13th. Potion Craft, December 13th. Rainbow Billy, The Curse of the Leviathan. What a title that is. December 15th. Sorry, I hiccuped there. And Hot Wheels Unleashed, Game of the Year Edition, was announced as coming December 15th. But then they pulled the announcement and they said they're having some issues and that they would announce a date at a future date. They would announce the new date. We'll talk about that in a minute. Leaving December 15th, Aliens Fireteam Elite, Breath Edge, Dragon Quest XI, Echoes of the Elusive Age, Firewatch, Lake, One Piece, Pirate Warriors 4, Neoverse, Race with Ryan, Record of Lotus War, Deedlit in Wonder Labyrinth. I've never heard of some of these. This feels like a prank. Rory McIlroy PGA Tour and Transformers Battlegrounds. So I think the biggest ones leaving there are Aliens Fireteam Elite. Firewatch is good.
The most complicated names for Tim to try to read off a piece of paper challenge. 2022. Yeah,
that third from the end one, Record of Lotus War.
I bet it's Record.
Deedlit in Wonder
Record
Labyrinth.
Of Lotus War.
What did I say?
Well, Record, I mean, it's the same word, but I'm sure because...
You're right.
It sounds like it's probably Record of Lotus War, Deedlit, and Wonder Labyrinth. Yeah, it makes no sense. I'm sure it makes sense to the people that play it, but just reading it, you're like, this is not real.
I will also, say, sometimes Rory having McElroy, titles like this causes me to look it up. I'm looking this game up right now because I'm curious what
Nothing
the Deedlit
infuriates war. Me more than when I spend money on a game and then it comes to Game Pass.
Well, that doesn't make me mad.
Lego Star Wars?
Yeah.
Is that the one you're thinking of?
Well,
just like, dang it.
But that was 8 months ago when that came out, in fairness.
I know.
Yeah. But also, like, sometimes when that happens to me, I'm like, well, I wanted it when I wanted it. Like,
thing is, though, I would have to agree with Gus in this situation, though, because I did buy it when it came out and I've barely played it. Like, I've beaten episode 1 and 2.
That does happen, too.
That's all I've... Because it's all, like... I was excited for that game, and then I almost feel like the delay when it got pushed to the spring of 22 kind of took the wind out of its sails for me, and I never could get into it. So I don't know. I mean,
I've been piecemealing it little by little because I only play with my kids, basically.
Right.
Yeah.
I heard of Eastward. What?
Oh, I was just going to say for the listeners, if in this episode I've talked over Spencer a couple of times, your internet has cut out to where I couldn't hear you, so I couldn't tell you were still talking. And
man,
when
I'm
it comes back,
you,
we're both talking
think
at the same time. And I'm like, oh, I know. It's internet providers.
I'm telling
are
you, it's not my internet. It's not my internet. It's my laptop. It like literally, it's that. It's not my internet because my internet's fine. Like I have like 800 megabytes per second. And I never have any dropouts because my house isn't that big and I have fiber. So like, it's not even that. It's just, I don't know what it is. It's like my laptop. It's just, I don't know if it's the processor is dying or there's not enough RAM. I don't know what it is. I don't know. I'm not knowledgeable enough about computer science to know exactly what's happening, but it's gotta be that.
Yeah.
Cause I don't have problems doing with anything else. Internet wise, yeah, so I don't know, man.
And it doesn't happen on your work computer when you do like work calls, right?
Yeah, I've never had problems.
The other game coming to Game Pass that I didn't mention because it's not December is Monster Hunter Rise, the Nintendo Switch exclusive. Well, it's Nintendo Switch and PC, but that's coming January 20th, and that'll be its first time outside of Nintendo or PC. It's also coming to PlayStation at the same time, but it's not coming to PlayStation Plus the way it is to Game Pass. Final thought on what you guys said about games being added after you purchase them. The number of games that I own that I bought and played at release and then they came to Game Pass a year or two later is astronomical. Like when I go down Game Pass and see the number of games that I own, it always makes me happy because like I assume that like Guardians of the Galaxy sold well and it's an amazing game, but I feel like not enough people played it. And when it came to Game Pass, I was like, this is awesome. I'm going to yell from the rooftops on the podcast that everybody should play Guardians of the Galaxy. So to me, it's like a good thing because it means more people will play a game I enjoyed and hopefully, you know, either games get sequels or like more people will have a conversation about it. So I find that to be interesting. It'll be interesting also if something like Gotham Knights comes to Game Pass because generally they kind of like curate the quality and that game is bad. So you guys haven't reflected on any of the rest of this.
I was just going to say that I did pre-install High on Life.
Interesting. I didn't know you were going to check that out.
Yep.
I think I'm a hard pass on that, but I do want to hear about it.
I think it looks funny. I think Gus was interested at one point. I don't know if he is still interested, but will I play it? Who knows?
To be determined.
Also, yeah, Hot Wheels Unleashed. I was excited for that to get added because I was going to download that. That was a game I wanted to play.
There's two things about that I want to talk about. So one, I assume that this is going to be re-added when they announce the second half of December, and it was just a problem with scheduling or contracting or whatever. One, I feel like it's really interesting that it's Hot Wheels Unleashed Game of the Year edition, because I feel like almost exclusively all the games that get added to Game Pass are the base edition with no DLC. This is the edition with three expansions and two additional like content packs. So it's like five different pieces of DLC. I don't feel like many games have the DLC because they want to upsell you on the DLC when you play the game on Game Pass. So that is interesting. The second piece I want to say is Lego Star Wars, The Skywalker Saga and Hot Wheels Unleashed, both coming in December. I don't think that's a coincidence. I think that is 100% part of the strategy. The same with having a lot of Xbox Series S on shelves ahead of the holiday season. Is this is when most families buy consoles for their kids and play them as a family. And the Xbox Series S is a more affordable console, good for gifting for Christmas. And Hot Wheels Unleashed and Lego Star Wars The Skywalker Saga are both critically acclaimed family accessible games that you can play multiplayer or co-op or just in general, like with a wide range of ages. So I think there was a coordinated effort there to get games like that onto the service ahead of the holidays to make it even more appealing to families, especially since you get a Game Pass like free 15 days or 30 days or whatever it is now in the box with all the consoles. So,
yeah, I think it's a good point. I didn't even think about that logic, but that makes a ton of sense. Having those like really, I think, flagship family type titles being in the service. That's a good point.
Also, don't sleep on Hot Wheels Unleashed. Like, I know it looks like another like licensed racing game, like knockoff. It's actually a solid racing game. Like, I have it. I played it when it came out, and I'm probably going to revisit it when they add the Game of the Year edition, because that'll give me all the DLC. But it's actually really a big game too. The campaign, you're like playing on like a map, like a play mat kind of thing. And it's pretty robust. There's a lot to do, a lot of races, and it twists and turns on it.
Definitely interested in that.
Okay. That's our final major story this week. I've got three quick hits. One is a wrap up of the latest Activision Blizzard news for the acquisition. I'm not going to put this in the major news part of the story unless there's something big. The two updates here are Microsoft is rumored to make concessions to the European Union to close the deal in that territory. The concessions being the ones that we talked about last week, 10 years of COD on Call of Duty, sorry, on PlayStation. I don't think Xbox cares at all if they have to commit to 10 years of COD on PlayStation to get a deal done. I think they're going to end up doing that anywhere they get pushed. And the second place they're being pushed is the FTC is rumored to sue to block the acquisition in the United States. And Microsoft has said if that comes to that, they will fight it in court. And I feel like that they will probably do the same. They will probably offer concessions and fight it because obviously they have a financial incentive to do so, because there is a $2 or $3 billion break clause if this acquisition doesn't go through. So they lose $2 to $3 billion. I can't remember if it's two or three if the deal doesn't go through. So you might as well spend whatever it's going to cost to litigate this to try and save the deal, because it's going to be cheaper than $2 billion. I'll tell you that much. So yeah, of course they're going to fight it. Second quick hit is the Fallout TV show. We have details from an interview that Todd Howard did with Lex Friedman on his podcast, which I'm only halfway through the podcast. And if you're a game nerd or a Bethesda nerd or a Todd Howard nerd, this podcast is fantastic. Lex Friedman really gets into it. And since he's not promoting anything, Todd's not on there to like sell you Starfield. It's just a really casual conversation about like how he makes games and what his inspirations are. and like where he started and how his like how he didn't get a job at Circuit City and that resulted in him being a video game developer. It's all really, really good. Most of all, Spencer, I think you would really, really like this podcast. It's also pretty long. It's over an hour.
Yeah, it was like 2 hours and something. I downloaded it yesterday because I remembered you talking about it. So I'll have it for my
it's really good
this week. It's funny you mentioned the Circuit City thing. So you said that in our group chat yesterday, that his Circuit City comment. And then I was on Facebook today and there's like some, I don't know if it was like an Indianapolis history page or what it was. It was like some sponsored post. And it was like 25 years ago today, the first Circuit City opened in Indianapolis. And I was like, man, that's really weird. Totally unrelated to what Tim was talking about. But how many other times have I been in a conversation with somebody talking Circuit City at any point in the last like, you know, X number of days? So I thought that was kind of strange. So apparently 1997 is when the first Circuit City opened in Indianapolis, which seems kind of late. You'd think it'd be a little bit earlier in the 90s, but I guess not. My only other Circuit City comment is my copy of KOTOR 2 for Xbox, which purchased at a Circuit City probably 15 years ago. Well, maybe a little less than that, but yeah.
Spencer, I don't know if you know this anecdote. I feel like you probably should because you and I have known each other for so long that I probably shared it, but I worked at Circuit City for approximately 2 months in the summer between my sophomore and junior year of college. And I worked in one store and then I was on loan to another store that was being opened up. And so I was like helping with like the interior, like remodel or something. And I left to go back to school and they never paid me for like my last few weeks of work. So when I eventually called them to like discuss it, they're like, yeah, somebody messed up the paperwork. We don't have any like proof of what you worked. And they're like, just tell us a roundabout amount and we'll round it up and pay you. And so that's what they did. They didn't want to argue it or risk getting in trouble for not paying an employee. So they're just like, yeah, that sounds reasonable. Here's, you know, this many thousands of dollars to cover it. They took out taxes and all that the way they were supposed to. But that was right before they went bankrupt. That was 2007. So I think they went bankrupt in or closed down in like 2000, either
probably,
the end of that
probably,
year or the beginning of the next year.
I was going to say it was probably the 08 financial crisis probably was their last nail in the coffin.
We went off on this tangent about the Phil Spencer interview, but what I was going to say is the piece of news that came out of that is that the Fallout TV show is a new story, which I think we kind of knew. It's not going to, and it's set in the same world as the games. So like things in the games will reference in the show, but since it's in a new setting, it'll be much like how each game is a new location and a new time period. This show will be a new location, a new time period that references the other games and time periods and locations from all of the various Fallout games. So it's kind of cool that the whole Fallout universe is all like one connected thing, even the TV show. And then finally, the last quick hit of the week is Games with Gold. Colt Canyon, December 1st through 31st, and Belated Fury, December 16th to January 15th. This was getting absolutely blasted on social media because PlayStation Plus, what do they call it? Instant Game Collection games for the month are Mass Effect Legendary Edition, Biomutant, and some other game. I think it's a new release that I hadn't heard of. But I mean, Biomutant is a pretty big double to triple A game. Didn't get great reviews, but it's still a big game. And then Mass Effect Legendary Edition obviously is the best, most modern version of three of the greatest RPGs of all time. That is pretty stark compared to these two games that almost no one has heard of. I feel bad because I feel like we're beating on like small indie games that get put on Games with Gold that maybe are hoping it's their big break, that some people will play it because they got their game given away. But I mean, the MSRP or like whatever, not it's not MSRP, but the price these games are full price is $15 and $20. So it's not like they're not even giving away like a lot of value just monetarily, even if you had heard of these games. So I don't know. Games with Gold and Xbox Live Gold in general need to be reimagined, but there's probably not a whole lot of motivation to do so since they're upselling people to Game Pass anyway. Spencer?
So I have a couple Circuit City related comments because okay. I was on the Wikipedia page. So their last store closed in 2009 and more. And this is interesting. Where did I lose that?
They're back because they were sold to a Chinese company, I believe. They're an online only retailer now.
Yeah, so according to Wikipedia, they closed more stores in 2009 than any other retail chain. So they were really impacted by the financial crisis, it looks like. Another thing, they started CarMax, and from 1991 to 2002, they owned CarMax. The car.
Who'd they sell it to then?
I think they just spun it off, like in a stock sale, so that they could just be their own independent company, is what it seems like from my brief readings here.
Very interesting.
And then the last thing I was going to say, do you remember the store Ultimate Electronics?
Vaguely.
They had like the blue and yellow, very super blue and red, very kind of similar color scheme as Best Buy did, but it was red instead of yellow. There was one in Kansas City by the Independence Center or whatever that mall was called. That was the only one I've ever known to exist. And I remember it opening and closing like within like 5 years. Like probably less than that, actually, because it probably opened in like 2003 and it was closed by 2006. Something like that. But I just thought of that, similar to Circuit City in my mind, as a kind of fabled electronics store long gone.
So I don't know. The company that bought the name and the website of Circuit City is called
Systemax.
Systemax. So they bought them in 2009. They also bought CompUSA and Tiger Direct, and they run all three of those as online stores, but they have the same website formatting and the same product category, products listings, according to Wikipedia, which has sourcing.
So I wonder trying to bank off of brand recognition, like for the 10 people out there that are like, oh yeah, Circuit City, I remember going there back in the
100%.
Day.
Yeah, and it's weird. It says all three sites eventually transitioned into a slightly rebranded mirrors of each other. So they're basically running three versions of the same site based on brand name. But what I want to know is, like, what are the logistics of the companies? Like, are they all, like, they didn't buy the logistics network of the company. They bought the brand name and the website. So, like, where does this stuff ship from? And, like, you never, like, at Black Friday, you see ads for Walmart, Target, Best Buy, and all these stores, and Amazon, and even trying to think, what's that other big online retailer that I can't think of right now? The one with the red logo, buy.com? No, that's not the one. But anyway, my point is, when's the last time you saw anything for Circuit City? They don't advertise. Most people don't even know it exists.
10 plus years ago. I mean,
yeah, but you can buy stuff on their website.
Honestly,
right now. How do they get customers?
The only Circuit City related thing I can think of was I don't know if it was here or it had to have been here, but there was an old Circuit City store that closed, at some point around 2009, probably. And for the longest time, they didn't take the signage down. And so I remember for years afterwards, like, probably something like 10 years ago still. So several years after it closed, there was still like that maroonish red, corner thing with Circuit City written on it. And it wasn't until many years after it actually closed that they took the signage down. And that's been the most recent Circuit City, right? Other than like watching like old TV or old movies where that's referenced, like the characters go to Circuit City or something.
Need for Speed Underground 2, how Circuit City, no wait, that was Best Buy. Dang it. Yeah. Also Systemax sold. So CompUSA and Circuit City were folded into Tiger Direct. And then Systemax sold all three to a company called PCM in 2015. And there's not a link here to PCM to tell me who PCM is, but it's just so strange. Like I want to buy something off CircuitCity.com just to see where the tracking information shows me it's coming from, just out of curiosity. Like, and like, what happens? Can you even buy like an Xbox Series X or any like Xbox products? I'm going to do it right now. I'm going to go see if I can buy an Xbox controller. Xbox. Okay, so it seems like they do sell. Okay, so they have two pages. When I searched for the word Xbox, only two pages came up, and it's mostly headsets. Microsoft Flight Simulator, Xbox Series S, Halo 5, nothing very modern. What's really weird is the Xbox Series X is $354.69, which is neither the regular price of $299 or the sale price of $249.99. How did they get to $354.69? So this is exactly what I thought it is. This is a website now that just sells stuff at really high marked up prices to people that are too stupid. Sorry, but it's true to know that Circuit City isn't a reputable brand anymore. they're just preying on people that'll be dumb. Yeah. But you can't like go here and buy the latest and greatest. It has three Xbox games total on the site. Sad. It's sad when brands like this get bought up by somebody that wants to just prey on the people that previously shopped with that brand.
Yeah, and like the logo in the top left corner is so pixelated. It's like you couldn't have gotten a higher res version of your own logo for this website.
Remember the ads for Circuit City? Man, we're way down the rabbit hole for people that make it this far into the show.
All I know is that Circuit City is where service is state of the art. That's all I know.
What do you mean their sir? That was their
like catchphrase, like in the commercials.
Oh, I remember
state of the art.
Remember how the doorways had the big red square over it, and in the commercial it was a plug that would like come out of screen and plug in and become the entrance to the store?
Vaguely sounds familiar. Yes,
that's what I remember. And where we lived in Missouri at the time, Circuit City and Best Buy were both across the street from each other, and that Circuit City is like a tire place now. I don't know.
I know that one. That one is one I can remember. They had not taken the signage down
until it was
2012.
Bought, which...
No, I remember being there around 2012, and it was still up. Like it still said Circuit City, even though it had been closed for years.
They eventually, you're right, it was years, but they eventually did finally
sell.
It was in
the mall parking lot, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I'm looking it up right now to see what it is.
Well, I remember, so, the reason why I remember is because there's a Men's Warehouse there, and I remember going for your wedding and getting our tuxes at that Men's Warehouse and seeing that that Circuit City was still, like, the signage was still up, and that was in 2012. So, I don't know, man.
This is hilarious. You'll never guess what it is now. It's an Xfinity store by Comcast. That's funny. So, this is Independence Center. It's a mall in Independence, Missouri, and it's in the parking lot of that, so... If you want to find it on Google Maps, it does not look like a Circuit City anymore. That's for sure. And if it wasn't obvious by this point, this is the end of the show where we talk about nonsense. And they actually turned it into an entire strip mall. It's like it looks like there's a Chuck E. Cheese in there, an Xfinity store,
Charles Entertainment Cheese.
Yeah, Charles Entertainment Cheese. That's his legal name. Mm-hmm. And so this used to be a Circuit City, which his is crazy now. Name. Is it's they. Chopped it up and it's three different stores. So very interesting. Circuit City. What a rabbit hole we always fall down at the end of the show. So 2 weeks till The Witcher. Callisto Protocol is out.
Really?
Not
just
great reviews.
Just 10 days. By the time this goes up, it'll be basically a week.
That's true. That's true. I'm interested to see what Gus is going to think of the Midnight Suns next week. I'm going to try and finish Deathloop this week. And maybe get back to a Plague Tale Requiem. That's one of the next ones on my list. And we'll see.
I'm going to try to play Midnight Suns for a couple hours when we're done here.
Yeah, text me your thoughts after a few hours. I want to know what you think.
Well,
especially
go to Home Depot first, but
the card system. I definitely am going to play Midnight Suns at some point. It's just I got enough to play right now, so I don't need anything. Okay, well, thanks for listening. Appreciate your time. I had a lot of fun this week. Can't wait to play some of this stuff. And I don't know what else to say. It's the end. Let's go. I'm Tim Shelton. You can follow me on Twitter at Tim Shelton.
I am Spencer Rain. You can follow me on Twitter at Makes It Rain.
And I'm Gus Harden. If you have any questions, you can always tweet us at MultiformPod on Twitter.com. Owned and operated by Elon Musk.
That's true. Sadly, it's true. What a hellscape it's become. Thanks for listening. See you next week.
New episodes post every Monday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern. You can contact us on Twitter at MultiformPod or by email at questions@multiformpodcast.com. If you enjoyed our show and you're feeling extra generous, please share it with your friends or on social media. You can subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or anywhere you listen.